Swinging spells down the street, same old decks we played last week. It's MTG in quarantine. We're all alright, we're all alright. MTG in Quarantine Podcast.
Heyo, what is up, everybody? My name is MJ, and you are listening to the one and only MTG in Quarantine Podcast, where the motto is EDH, community, now and always. As usual, before we get started here today, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So a huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Bence, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And did you know that I am a Quiver Time brand ambassador? If you did, great. If you don't, now you do know. Again, you can go on over to quivertime.com, utilize my promo code MTGIQ in all lower caps. That is MTGIQ for 10% off your order. I'm also an ambassador over at Inked Gaming. That's I-N-K-E-D gaming.com. Got two really awesome versions of the MTG and Quarantine branded playmat, both the full color logo as well as the grayscale version. They both look killer. You're going to want one for you and all of your friends. So again, you can go on over to Inked Gaming. That is I-N-K-E-D gaming.com for more information. Utilize my affiliate code. And again, as with both of those, every purchase helps support the channel and it's greatly appreciated. Now, on to the episode. So, MC Chicago was about 3 weeks ago at this point, I believe, as of the time we are recording this episode. Feels like it's been far longer than that, but alas, it's only been 3 weeks. So it makes MC Vegas seem like it's going to be forever from now, which is kind of unfortunate, but it is what it is. At least the weather seems to be getting a little nicer, knock on wood on that one, obviously. But anyway, got an episode that came right out of that event, and bringing on a brand new guest for this just awesome EDH casual deck tech. So without further ado, I would like to introduce today's brand new guest to the show, Kevin from the Elder Drunken Highlander channel. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. How are you doing tonight?
Doing okay. It's a Monday, kind of sucks, but otherwise doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Kind of quiet weekend, which I kind of needed after Chicago.
Yeah, I still feel like in the last week or two, I'm still kind of recovering from Chicago. I don't know what it is. I've just been feeling really tired. So, yeah, con crash is a thing. And I think just for me, it's been kind of protracted. So, you know. But anyway, before we get to the meat of today's episode, why don't you give a shout out to who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm part of Elder Drunken Highlander with my friends Josh and Austin. We do what I like to call questionable deck techs at all power level spectrums, all the way from casual to CDH. We basically have this kernel of an idea of what if we did this horrible thing that's really bad and pushed it, sometimes at a casual space or a CDH space. So we post YouTube content. We've been doing a lot of CDH, like off-meta brews. We also do casual content. We have done streams occasionally, and we post on Twitter and Instagram and other sources that I'm forgetting off the top of my head.
Nice, nice. And I will have that episode or the link tree for all of your content in the episode description below, so definitely go check that out if you're interested in seeing these deck techs. But anyway, we're going to have one of those deck techs right here, right now, for your listening pleasure. So without further ado, I would like to introduce the deck that we're going to be talking about today, and then I'm going to get out of the way and let Kevin explain exactly what the deck does and why he enjoys it so much. So this is going to be Niv-Mizzet Reborn, a 6/6 Dragon Avatar costing Wooburg. and is flying, and when Niv-Mizzet Reborn enters the battlefield, reveal the top 10 cards of your library. For each color pair, choose a card that's exactly those colors from among them. Put the chosen cards into your hand and the rest onto the bottom of your library in a random order. So now that we have that out of the way, Kevin, take it away. What does this deck do? Why do you enjoy this deck so much? And it's also absolutely blinding in foil and in person, so that's kind of cool too.
All right, so this is a five-color Voltron list, and how this deck came to be, we have to go all the way back to when I started playing, not just Commander, Elder Dragon Highlander back in 2008. I was getting burned out in Standard at the time from getting jundled out with a lot of Blightnings, and I was shown this new format called Elder Dragon Highlander, and the first Commander I made was Uro the Mistalker, which is an Ur Voltron deck from the ye olden days. So, played that deck a lot, really enjoyed it, and I ended up taking it apart around when the first pre-cons came out for Commander. Ever since then, I kind of had a... I've always wanted to play Voltron to some capacity, and this... Now we go time travel forward to, I believe, 2021. I'm listening to another podcast for a show that no longer exists called CMDR Central, and they had an episode about Voltron. And they hit a lot of the points that I resonated with even back all the way in 2008, where Voltron decks are typically very fragile. You have this commander, you put a bunch of things on it, and then what inevitably happens is it gets killed, and then you sit on your hands for the rest of the game. Because you spent so much tempo and so many resources on this one thing, when it goes away, you're kind of out of the game. So I was thinking to myself, like, during slash after that episode, is there a way where you can solve the quote-unquote Voltron problem? And my thought was, well, you need to have a commander that draws cards, but not one that draws cards on contact, because if it gets killed before then, you're kind of still in the Voltron problem situation. You need something that draws cards before you Voltron people. And that's what I thought of Niv-Mizzet Reborn. I'm like, well, this thing draws a bunch of cards. Okay, how do we Voltron Niv? And then I remembered from the Uro the Mistalker days, some of the best enchantments in that deck were the Cycle of Lorwyn, Shadowmoor block, two color auras. And with that idea in my head, we're off to the races with how this deck works. So it's a Voltron deck that puts auras onto Niv-Mizzet with the assistance of a Gigantic Companion, and then you just hit people. But you avoid the Voltron problem because you draw the cards first. And then when you start attacking, someone kills in the visit, you recast it and refill your hand, and the train never stops.
Yeah, and I have, I guess, the dubious honor of having been steamrolled by this multiple times at MC Chicago. It's actually fairly resilient because, again, you're mentioning enchantments. Well, those enchantments, all in the two colors, obviously, for the guild pairings, are just really damn good. You know, you can basically suit up Niv-Mizzet without really needing to use equipment. You can just use those enchantments, but still get the same kind of equipment-style payoff. And the fact that you're constantly being able to gain card advantage by chewing through the top cards of your library, that definitely makes a difference. I was very surprised the first time that we were playing at Chicago there, just how resilient that deck was, how well you were able to just start chewing through the deck, get pieces on to Niv-Mizzet, and then just start beating face. It was something to see, although, again, just with every card in that deck being foil, it was actually hard to see in some cases with the lighting there, but that's a whole nother thing, right?
It is a whole other thing. That, as part of the strategy, you blind your opponent so much they don't know what your cards do, and then I inform you that you died.
My eyes! It's that SpongeBob meme of the guy, like, my eyes, But yeah, it's friends out there listening. It's something like that. yeah, but definitely making this deck work. And I mean, I guess coming in, I'm surprised that there are that many two-color cards that just have all these sorts of effects. Do you want to just talk about some of your MVPs in the 99, just kind of how they all bring things together?
Yeah, so I'm going to break this into two parts. We'll get to the stuff in the 99 in a little bit. I actually want to talk about the 101st card in the deck, which is Gigantha. So Gigantha is my companion for this deck, and if you don't know what Gigantha does, it is four generic hybrid red-green for a 5/5 legendary creature Elemental Elk. The companion clause is no card in your starting deck has the same mana symbol in its mana cost. So what that means is you can't play cards with double pips. For example, you cannot play Counterspell in this deck because there's two blue symbols. And the Gigantasm ability has tap, add white, blue, black, red, and green to your mana pool. This mana can't be spent to pay generic costs. So if you have something that's like two generic and blue, Gigantha can only be paid for the blue and not the generic. So I talk about how Nivisit's really important for this deck. I would argue Gigantha is more important. The tempo advantage that this deck gains by putting Gigantha into play, waiting a turn, then playing Nivisit, facilitates an entire different strategy. The first half was Voltron. The second half is what I call Twiddle Storm. There's a lot of cards in this deck that have the ability to untap a creature and sometimes something else with it, and they cost less than 5 mana. So the ability to play those, untap Gigantha, and then tap it to play all said auras really is what turbos the deck into a really strong game state. And I would argue that Gigantha is more powerful than Nivisit in this deck because of that reason. So I just want to highlight that as the 101st card, it might be the most important card in the 99, as it were.
And yeah, you do have some of those cards. I just saw one on your list. I just went right by it. But I think Kiora's Follower is one of those untap effects, which also works.
Kiora's Follower is one of the best ones because it's both a ramp and a Gigantha untapper.
Yep. And the fact it's also two colors exactly, which is great. Which is not something you can say about most of these other cards that you normally see in a ramp or a situation like this, or a Twiddle Storm kind of deck, where you're typically not going to be trying to utilize two colors, because one, that forces you into a certain color pairing, and two, it's also a little bit harder to cast, too. So, but you're able to get around that by being able to draw it right off the Niv trigger, and that's definitely the key here.
It really is the key. So to go back to what you originally asked about, what standout cards in the 99 are, to really talk about the Voltron-y bit that makes the deck really persistent and hit people, there's two enchantments I'll highlight, but these are both enchantments that protect Niv-Mizzet, because while the deck still doesn't stumble too far behind if Niv-Mizzet gets removed, it's not the goal. The goal isn't for me to play my Niv-Mizzet and then kill it myself to replay it. So the first one I'll go into is Shield of the Oversoul. This is two generic hybrid green-white. The enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and indestructible if it's green, and +1/+1 and flying if it's white. Honestly, Nivisit has flying, so that part doesn't really matter, but the indestructible is very important. Being able to survive some target removal, a lot of board wipes, it really helps keep Nivisit around. And the second one that I'll get into that is another great way to protect Nivisit is Clout of the Dominus. This is just a hybrid blue-red for an enchantment. The enchanted creature is blue, it gets +1/+1 in Shroud, and if it's red, it gets +1/+1 in Haste. This one has a little bit of a timing thing, because you have to put your other auras on before you cast Clout of the Dominus, or else then you can't put anything else on. But 1 mana, +2/+2 Shroud Haste, that's a 1 mana Lightning Greaves that gives a +2/+2. That is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, and you also kind of get around the issue you would have with Lightning Greaves. Just, yes, having the equipment, and I did say this before, having the equipment is nice because it gives you that flexibility. But on the other hand, having the enchantments, the fact that they stack on top of each other, and the fact that the Greaves don't give you that boost also makes a huge difference right there. But yeah, again, it is a timing thing. So you got to really use your noodle when you play this deck.
You do. And I have been blown out a couple times where, you're playing Nivisit, you put, three auras, and then you play it, and they go, I'll respond, kill it. It happens, but again, the whole thesis of the deck is you can quickly repay Nivisit and rebuild. And I won't go through the rest of, the categories as in detail, but there's one other card I will highlight that's not a Voltron-y bit, and that is the new card type Battle for the Invasion of Ravka. This is just 5 generics, and Nivisit can't hit it, but the payoff is worth it, and it's all on the backside. The front side is when it enters the battlefield, you exile target a non-land permanent that isn't exactly two colors. So you can't handle Guild Thing, but you can get rid of a lot of other problematic cards. And this has 4 defense counters. So if you haven't seen a battle before, how battles work is when you play it, you give it to an opponent to defend, and then it acts like a planeswalker. You can attack the battle. They can block as needed. You can also deal direct damage to it. And then once the last defense counter is removed, you can then cast the backside for free. So in this case, the backside is Guild Pack Paragon. It's an artifact creature construct. When you cast a spell that's exactly two or more, or when you cast a spell that's exactly two colors, look at the top six cards of your library. You may reveal a card that's exactly two colors from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest in the bottom of your library in any order, or in a random order. If only this deck had a bunch of two-colored cards it was built around. This card, the backside of Guild Pack Paragon, is immensely powerful. If I'm able to flip the battle, I would say about three quarters of the time, I get to look at my entire deck in that turn with combination Gigantha Untappers and then just repeatedly casting them and just digging and digging and digging. I go through the entire deck and then some. So we end up casting 20 or so spells. And then you pass the turn after taking like 10 minutes of just casting spells constantly, getting triggers going. Invasion of Raqqa is absolutely insane.
Yeah, that seems pretty good, honestly. Especially then you also have Tome of the Guild Pact in here, too. So whenever you cast a multicolored spell, you draw a card. So that's another nice little way to just be able to get some payoffs if you're not able to get the other engine going, or if, you know, people actually want to block. So, yeah.
I will say the multicolored themes, like, so Invasion Ravnica and, like you said, Tome of the Guild Pact are the best ones. There's some other cards that care about when you cast a multi-card spell do a thing. Widespread Thieving is two generic red for an enchantment with Hideaway 5, and then when you cast a multi-card spell, you create a treasure, and then you can pay Wurberg and cast the Hideaway card. We don't care about that. Just cast a spell, make a treasure is really good. But an even a smaller effect, like Jensen Carthalion, I believe, if I could find it in my list, it's the white... green one, and I'm going to find it. It is Jensen Carthalion. Okay. So it is a 2-2 for a white and a green. Whenever you cast a multi-card spell, you scry one. If it was all five cards, you make a 4-4 angel with flying and vigilance. They can pay five and tap and add Wooburg. Really, you got to scry one on every spell. And again, if you're looking for something specific, maybe for that turn, maybe the next turn, you will find it.
Yeah, that does seem pretty powerful. And then you also have a nice, Cascading Cataracts effect is also really nice, too.
It really is. And the ability to just fix the mana if needed, but again, the digging. The digging is what makes this deck really strong. The Voltron's because kind of the end point, but it's the resilience and the ability for the deck to find what it needs at any point in time is what makes it so powerful, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just looking through your list here, you just have so many ways to be able to work with this ability. Shout out to General Ferris for Kyrick as well, just for pumping out golems too, which is really nice. There is a lot of just good stuff here, and I'm not kidding, readers, you or listeners, excuse me. Most of the cards in here actually are still two colors. There are a few like Bloom Tender which are not. But again, they tap for so much mana that if you can't get this off Niv-Mizzet, that's fine. Honestly, you have other options, as we've already discussed. You don't have to, you're not necessarily digging for it. And if you find it, great. Then you get five mana off a single tap, untap it, gain five more mana. So it's crazy stuff.
Yeah, I'll touch upon the two-color bit. This deck has gone through a couple iterations that you can see on our channel. The first version, I was playing five of each guild pair. And the idea of doing that is if you take out your hypergeometric calculator and like and crunch the numbers, if you have the most amount of guilds and like but keep them in a balanced way, Niv-Mizzet will hit the most cards. And it was five. I later brought it up to six. And in the days of six, Niv-Mizzet, on average, was drawing five cards when it entered. And 5 mana for a 6/6 ETB draw 5 is really good. Since then, I found that to be a little too restrictive, so I've changed it to some can have 5, some can have 6, depending on what guild it is. because as I've done research on this deck, some guilds are really good and others are not. And so the guilds that have less, a less depth of the pool, I pared down to five. Because not only are you looking at two cover cards, you have to keep the Giganthid restriction in mind. Mm-hmm. So looking at two cover cards that don't have duplicate mana symbols, and some of these guild pools are really thin.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list here, and I can tell that Rakdos is definitely one of those, because it's not really a...
Rakdos is one of those.
Really?
Rakdos Patron of Chaos was a godsend. Because if Rakdos Patron of Chaos was like a Sarkhan the Mad, and that card's like a 5-mana Dark Confidant that like eventually kills itself, Rakdos was not a very good color combination, or still isn't.
For this, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, you were able to just jam so much value into this deck. It's mind-boggling, honestly. Just the fact they were able to have that continued mana sink with Gigantha, the fact that you have a commander who's able to get you so much card advantage ridiculously, and then also be just big, also kill the table, have ways to be able to generate stupid amounts of mana, be able to still interact with other people, be able to thin your deck with all the fetch lands and whatnot. It's a very strong deck. That's all I can say.
I will agree with that. Like, it's kind of weird to say as a deck builder, like, yes, my deck is very strong, and like patting yourself on the back, but I genuinely think it is the most synergistic and most powerful deck I've probably ever made over my entire Commander career of like 15-ish years. And the reason why I like the deck so much is that there are some decks that are resilient but very combo-based. Like, you can cast your tutors and find exactly what you need every game. This deck, I kind of intentionally pulled back on the tutors, with the exception of one, which is Conflux. That card's just really funny. But I really kind of took a step back from tutors for this deck.
Mm-hmm.
The games can feel similar. Like, the deck has a game plan for the first, like, five or six turns. You ramp, you get Gigantha, you play Niv, you draw things, you put things on Niv. But after that, you kind of have to play it by ear of, like, what do you hit? Sometimes you hit your vulnerable pieces, sometimes you don't. So you kind of have to adapt along the way. So that's what I find really enjoyable about playing it. It's similar in the beginning, but it can lead to really diverging game states. And it keeps the deck from being boring, which is, I think, an important part of keeping a deck over a long period of time. You can't get bored of it.
Yeah, and that's definitely a key about especially casual EDH is we have so many cards available, and again, WotC is pumping out so many new cards that it's trying to find the right combination. I think it's the experience that we're all trying to chase, but we don't necessarily get there. Hopefully you've now, the listeners have listened to the episode I had with Cole, the Uncommon Commander, on signature decks, and just how much work we as brewers are willing to go to try to find that nth degree improvement on a deck, and we're willing to just do crazy things to find that. So it sounds to me like you've put in the thought and you've really made a list that is tight. Is this the kind of thing where it's pretty much set in stone, or you think there's some things you could easily cut from this and change if new cards come out?
Yeah, so I think a lot of I talked about the guilds that were kind of light on cards. I think the moment they start printing really nice utility cards for those guilds that are kind of lacking that depth really changes things. Like, for example, Rakdos Patron of Chaos is a complete godsend for this deck, because it was like a card that did something in Rakdos colors, which is unfortunately hard to find for this particular build. No shade for Rakdos decks in general, those are cool, but for this deck, there wasn't a lot for me. In terms of, like, other things, there's, like, a funny bucket list item that I think will happen one day, but I don't think will be happening soon, is if they print when they go back to MDFCs, in particular, like, a Zendikar Rising set, where they have, like, front side spell, backside land, if they made two-color MDFCs, that would dramatically change this deck. But I'm definitely not holding my breath on getting that for at least years.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen enough of those. It's time to kind of let him sit a little bit, I think, just from a design standpoint. But
and I agree. And, like, I think to show, like, how insane those cards would be in this deck, if they, let's say, hypothetically made the 7 mana Lightning Helix for Boros cards, colors. It's like 5 generic red white, deal 3, gain 3, and the backside is a land that came into play tapped that was red white. I would play that in a heartbeat.
Sure.
And that's like uncastable in like every other situation. It's like that's how good I think those cards are, and maybe rightfully so, they should never be made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So we've basically gone through the entire deck. Is there any other piece before we wrap up here that you just really want to talk about?
I'll talk about one funny thing. This deck is playing all 5 border posts, which is definitely a commander staple. And if you don't know what a border post is, I don't know what you're doing. These are a cycle of 5 artifacts from the Shards of Alara block, specifically from Alara Reborn. I'll wield Wildfield Border Post, for example. It's generic, green and a white for an artifact. You may pay 1 generic and return a basic land you control to its owner's hand rather than pay Wildfield Border Post mana cost. It comes into play tapped and taps at a white and a green. The way I put these in this deck, and even the way I play, I count these as lands, which is kind of greedy, because the actual list, I said I have 37 lands. 5 of those are border posts. This deck really has 33. But there's a couple of things. Well, so there's a couple of reasons why I'm playing this. The main one is that Niv-Mizzet can hit it, so these count as land drops that Niv-Mizzet can find. Sometimes the deck is running low in lands, needs to find something. Niv-Mizzet can't hit a forest or a hollowed fountain, but it can hit border posts. So border posts are a way for the deck to get land drops out of something that's a little weird. And also, when you cast them, you get a lot of the multi-covered synergies that we talked about earlier. You get to make a treasure, or a golem, or draw a card, or look at the top 6. But in order to play these, I had to really change how my gameplay plans worked early game. Because these weren't in the initial build, and these came like a year or so later. And the way I had to change is I had to prioritize fetching basic lands. Because if you draw a border post with no lands and or no basics in play, you can't do the ultimate cost, and thus you lose the ability for it to count as a land drop. So oftentimes, when I have a fetch land in play, I do play all 10. The second land, like the first one, the first fetch might get a shock land just to facilitate colors. The second one is probably getting a basic, which is a very weird thing to say for 5 colors. But because of the border post requirement of counting those as lands and make sure that works, and the ability for Gigantha to be cast for only 2 colors and make the 5 colored mana that I need for Niv, it really gives that deck the flexibility to do that. So I just find that a really funny, quirky thing that no one casts a border post ever. Whenever I cast it, half the time, Sultan Tabu goes, "A what now?" And I have to like show it to them, and they're like, "What is this doing here?" And this is why.
Yeah, I mean, I think it made sense to me why you were playing them, but now they've really explained how you've philosophically looked at them, I think that really adds an extra level of understanding. Because we can look at this and say, well, it's a really bad version of Manalith. But the fact that, again, since it cheats its mana cost, and we as Commander players, we love doing that in a lot of cases, the fact they're able to get that out there for a reduced cost, it may not help you that turn necessarily, but you're definitely setting yourself up. You guarantee yourself a land drop for the next turn, and you can still drop a land that same turn. So again, I can definitely see how this synergizes, and it's also an additional card off Niv. So yeah, just there's a lot of upside to a seemingly all downsides card in our much sped up version of this format.
Absolutely. And that'll be the one thing I like to drive home with this casual deck tech is I, as a player, lean into synergies very heavily. Like this whole deck is just a whole synergy pile that really functions like a card functions like at least 3 different cards in every sense. This deck does not have a lot of the staples that you would expect for a deck. This does not have a Cyclonic Rift. This does not have Swords. This does not have Path to Exile. This doesn't have Rhystic Study. All of those cards are cards I intentionally chose to omit. Now, is Rhystic Study a bad card? No, of course not. Is Swords bad? No, Swords is not a bad card. But because of what this deck is trying to do, with 2 color cards, multicolored synergy, frankly, those cards weren't good enough, which sounds absolutely insane. But if you think about why you're playing a card and what synergies it plays into, you understand why they're not in the deck. So I implore you, as a listener, take a look at your decks. I'm not saying cut Rhystic Study, cut Cyclonic Rift, but really look at that card and go, why am I playing this? And is there a more synergistic card that worked with my commander or my strategy that would work better? And I think, A, it'll be more fun to see the surprise your opponent's faces, but you'll also find it might be more powerful. But really, it just makes for a more diverse game experience for you between your different decks. If all six of your decks have Cyclonic Rift, they can feel samey. That's give a variety for yourself and honestly for your opponents as well. So I just encourage you, if you have stably like cards, give them a hard look. Maybe they do deserve a slot, but maybe they don't.
All right, and I think we will end our discussion there. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me. It was awesome having you on the show. Awesome hearing about this particular deck.
Yeah, of course, and thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, no problem. Again, where can folks find the Elder Drunken Highlander content?
Yeah, so you can find Elder Drunken Highlander on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and then you can find me personally at Kellis12504 on Twitter as well, if you want to hear my thoughts just being shouted into the void.
Sure. And we will have a link to all of that stuff in the episode description below, so you can go find it for yourself out there, listeners. And anyway, if you want to listen to any of the previous episodes on the MTG and Quarantine podcast, you can do those on the, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. That's going to be your Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rockcast, Podcast, Overcast, Breaker, and a million others. I honestly don't remember all of them, but if it's a major podcast outlet, you can probably find my content on there. You can also find me on the Twitter sphere at MTG and Quarantine. I'd like to utilize this opportunity again to give another huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. A huge round of thank yous again to Mr. Big Benz, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Row for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name is MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.